Morning, ladies and gentlemen. The record will indicate all the jurors are present, counsel and the parties present. Mr. Pantone, you want to resume Dr. Zarnik's testimony?
Yes, Your Honor. We had taken Dr. Walt out of order. I'd like to resume with Dr. Zarnik.
Yes.
Morning, Dr. Zarnik.
Good morning.
Please take a look at Exhibit 38. Please identify Exhibit 38 for the record.
Yes, that is a memo that I wrote in response to a meeting I had with John Stuopnagel in early November of 1998, in which John gave me a list of dates that I had been out of the office and he wanted to know why.
Are these the list of the dates that Dr. Stuopnagel provided to you?
Yes.
You responded by identifying for each and every day where you were and what you were doing?
That's correct.
What did you do with this document?
I sent it to Dr. Stuopnagel by email from my home.
Please, Exhibit 55. Could you identify this document for the record, please?
Yes, this is a list of dates that I knew I was going to be out of the office in 1999, and I gave it to Dr. Stuopnagel in approximately March.
These deal with business and professional obligations you had?
Yes.
Dr. Zarnik, let me ask you some questions about scientific advisory board issues, to which Dr. Walt testified yesterday. What was your role on the scientific advisory board?
Well, I was the chief scientific officer of the company, and I had the internal job of organizing the scientific advisory board meetings, working with Dr. Walt to create an agenda, and after Dr. Walt began the meeting, to lead the discussion.
When was the first scientific advisory board meeting held?
In January of 1999.
And did you prepare the agenda for that meeting?
Yes.
Did you help run that meeting?
Yes.
Exhibit 46, please. Do you recognize Exhibit 46 as a copy of an email you received on or about January 29th of 1999?
Yes.
And you received this from Paul Schimmel?
Yes.
Who is Paul Schimmel?
He was a professor at Scripps, and he's on the scientific advisory board.
This says this was a nice meeting that you ran for the first SAB meeting?
Yes.
When was the second SAB meeting?
In June of 1999.
You also prepared the agenda for that and helped run that meeting?
Yes.
Prior to when Jay Flatley came on board as the CEO, did anyone ever criticize you? Any member of management ever criticize you with respect to the SAB?
There was no criticism. We had regular internal discussions about how to make those meetings as valuable as possible.
Exhibit 81, please. Scroll down to the bottom, please. Next page. Dr. Zarnik, do you recognize this as an email that you sent to Dr. Stuopnagel, Chi, and Mr. Pytaluski?
Yes.
On August 17th of 1999?
That's correct.
And this relates to scheduling the next Scientific Advisory Board meeting?
Yes.
You say your intent is to winnow down the SAB meetings down to twice a year. If you have any input, please let you know.
Correct.
Scroll up, please. Is this the email that you received back from Dr. Stuopnagel that same day, August 17th of 1999?
Yes.
He's indicating he's bidding to have these SAB meetings held only once a year.
Correct.
Did you and Dr. Stuopnagel have any discussions where Dr. Stuopnagel commented on his view of the importance of SAB meetings?
Objection, hearsay.
Sustained.
Did Dr. Stuopnagel tell you that he felt that your work in connection with SAB meetings wasn't very important to the company?
Objection, hearsay.
Overruled.
Yes, John felt that was not an important activity.
How do you know that?
He told me directly.
What did he say?
He said he thought that the SAB meetings were not a good use of the company's time or resources, that it was expensive, and that in his view, being an SAB member was the cushiest job in startups.
I'll move to strike the comment beginning with, in his view.
Overruled.
Let's move on, sir, to the January 2000 SAB meeting to which David Walt testified yesterday.
Yes.
Were you responsible for preparing the agenda for that meeting?
Yes.
Did you contact David Walt with respect to what subjects might be addressed at that SAB meeting?
Yes, in early January.
Exhibit 113, please. Do you recognize the lower portion of this page to be an email that you received from David Walt on January 13th of 2000?
Yes.
Does this relate to the January 2000 SAB meeting?
Yes.
Dr. Walt starts out by providing some thoughts. Had you earlier requested input from David Walt?
Yes, in early January, I asked David for his advice on how we should run the next meeting.
This is what he provided to you?
Yes.
And he indicated that you should use the SAB for problem solving and that you should have brief, highlight-type presentations from key Illumina employees?
Yes.
Scroll up, please. Then you thank David Walt for his input, passing on the draft of the agenda.
Yes.
Exhibit 114, please. Is this an email you sent out, Dr. Zarnik?
Yes.
On January 18th, 2000?
Correct.
And a number of people are listed as the people to whom the email was sent. Who are these individuals? Goodnow, Walt, Cower, Hood, Schimmel, Sejnowski, Still.
Those seven people were the SAB members, Scientific Advisory Board members at that time.
So you sent this email to the entire Scientific Advisory Board?
Yes.
With a copy to Mark Chi?
Yes.
Scroll down, please. In this email, you state that you plan to spend most of your time at the SAB meeting reviewing experimental challenges and discussions with R&D colleagues.
That's correct.
Is that your intent at that point in time? To use the SAB meeting to talk about reviewing experimental challenges?
Yes.
What specific experimental challenges did you have in mind that would be discussed at the SAB meeting?
Challenges is a euphemism for problems, and we had experimental problems in a variety of areas. But the main area in which we were having experimental problems was in decoding.
Exhibit 115, please. Dr. Zarnik, do you recognize this as an email sent to you by Jay Flatley on January 18th, 2000?
Yes.
Asking whether there's an agenda for the SAB meeting coming up on Friday?
Yes.
Is this your response to your email responding to Jay Flatley?
Yes, it is.
Dated January 18th, 2000?
Yes.
You sent copies to John Stupnagel and Mark Chi?
Yes.
You indicate in this email that David Walt and you have been talking about what you want in the meeting, and the consensus is you want to choose R&D people with specific challenges to get feedback from the SAB. Is that right?
Yes.
Again, still thinking at this point in time you would present scientific problems and challenges at the SAB meeting?
That's correct.
Were you able to discuss scientific challenges and scientific problems at that January 2000 board meeting?
Ultimately, no.
Tell the jury what happened.
Within a short period of time after I sent this memo out, John Stupnagel and Mark Chi came to my desk and told me that we could not use the SAB meeting for talking about problems the company was having. John said specifically that we shouldn't be airing our dirty laundry in public like this.
So what, if anything, did you do with respect to the SAB agenda that you were preparing?
They were emphatic on this point, and ultimately I changed the agenda on short notice.
For what purpose?
I changed the agenda so we could have a productive day-long meeting. But I changed the agenda in such a way that scientists were no longer going to come in, talk about the problems they were having, and then get the SAB involved in trying to solve those problems.
Why did you do that?
John and Mark were emphatic on this point, and frankly, I thought we were working as a team at that point, and I tried to accommodate what they thought we should be doing at this meeting.
Had you previously arranged to schedule some of the Illumina scientists to attend the SAB meeting for purposes of discussing experimental problems?
Yes, I had spent most of the day on Monday and Tuesday talking with Illumina scientists, asking them if they would prepare a brief introduction to the problem they were having, and then to pose the problem to the Scientific Advisory Board so that the Scientific Advisory Board could give us feedback on how to fix that problem.
Exhibit 116, please. For the record, Dr. Zarnik, is this the actual agenda that you prepared, the final agenda you prepared for the SAB meeting?
Yes.
And when did you distribute this agenda to SAB members?
On Thursday evening, I dropped it off at the desk at the hotel at which they were staying and asked the person behind the desk to distribute it to the rooms where people were staying.
When was the first time you received any sort of negative feedback from Illumina with respect to SAB meetings?
It was within a week of this meeting.
And from whom did you receive negative feedback in terms of Illumina management?
Well, the first time I heard from anyone that there were concerns about this meeting was from Jay Flatley, who had told me that he had heard from a member of the SAB that was concerned about how the meeting was run.
After getting this feedback from Jay Flatley, did you do anything, sir, in an effort to try to address any concerns and improve the SAB meetings?
This was the first input Jay had given me on the SAB meeting. And frankly, Again, at that point, I thought that I was part of the team. So I virtually immediately sent an email to people I know who are heads of other startup companies and asked them what their experience with their scientific advisory board has been and how do they get it to be a useful meeting.
Exhibit 132, please. You recognize Exhibit 132?
Yes.
What is this?
This is the email that I sent out to David after having heard comments from Jay. I copied Jay and John and Mark and letting them know that I was about to undertake an effort to improve the SAB meeting, including the poll that I had just mentioned.
Exhibit 141, please. You recognize this email, dated February 24th, 2000?
Yes, this was the cover email that I used to distribute the results of the poll.
Distribute to whom?
To Mark Chi, Jay Flatley, John Stulpnagel, and David Walt.
Were you still the chief scientific officer on February 24th, 2000?
Yes.
When were you told you were no longer CSO?
On March the 1st.
Your Honor, if I may confer with Ms. Kearns. If we could move to Exhibit 148, please. Recognize Exhibit 148, Dr. Zarnik?
Yes.
Recognize this as an email sent to you by Jay Flatley on March 21st of 2000?
Yes.
You had testified previously about Jay Flatley informing you he wanted to change your compensation, change your salary, change your stock, correct?
Yes.
This is an email where Jay Flatley forwarded you a change of position agreement, a new contract?
Yes.
Had you seen the contract prior to March 21st, 2000?
No.
Next page, please. Is this the actual change of position agreement that Jay Flatley had forwarded to you in March of 2000?
Yes.
This agreement would have reduced your salary?
Yes.
And it would have permitted the company to buy back 167,000 shares of your stock at a penny a share?
Yes.
Did you and Jay Flatley discuss this draft agreement?
Yes, we did.
What did Jay Flatley say about the draft agreement?
Objection, hearsay.
Sustained.
Did you agree to sign the draft agreement?
No, I did not.
Did you tell Jay Flatley you wouldn't sign?
It was hard, but I had to look Jay in the face and tell him I just wouldn't sign this.
What did Jay Flatley say to you when you told him I won't sign this agreement?
Objection, hearsay.
Sustained.
Mr. Flatley threaten you in any manner after you told him you wouldn't sign it?
Objection, argumentative, hearsay.
It is leading and suggestive. Sustained. You want to just ask him what he said, and I'll determine whether or not it should be stricken.
That was my prior question.
Yes.
What did Jay Flatley say to you when you told him you wouldn't sign this change of position agreement?
After I told Jay that I would not sign this document, Jay paused for a moment. He looked at me and said, "You know what this means, don't you?" And I said, "Yes, I know what it means, but I have to be able to look at myself in the mirror."
Dr. Zarnik, was your salary actually reduced from 185 to 165?
Yes.
Did you have any problem with that?
No.
Was your stock actually reduced at that point in time, where the company bought back 167,000 shares?
No, Jay learned from his attorneys that that was illegal.
How do you know that?
Jay told me he had learned from his attorneys that it was not legal.
What was not legal?
That changing my stock without my agreement was illegal in the face of the fact that I had a stockholder's agreement that entitled me to that stock.
Dr. Zarnik, when did Illumina, management of Illumina, first talk about possibly going public?
Well, Mark, John, and I did the planning for the company in the summer of 1998, and we were certainly talking about going public as one of the options for the company, you know, regularly during that summer.
Did you participate during that time frame in those discussions about possibly going public?
Of course, yes.
This was still pre-disclosure of your depression?
Yes.
Now, after Jay Flatley came on board as the new CEO and president, were you included in any of the strategic planning sessions for the initial public offering, preparations and planning for going public?
Not in any of the planning.
Any of the strategic planning?
Not in any of the strategic planning.
Were you invited to any of the meetings between Illumina's senior management and the company's lawyers dealing with the IPO?
None at all.
Were you invited to meetings involving the underwriters who were dealing with the initial public offering?
I was invited to make presentations on the optical nose to what I believe were analysts who came through the company learning about Illumina.
Anything else?
No.
Did you help in any way, shape, or form with respect... strike that. Were you asked to help with respect to the drafting of the S-1 registration statement that Illumina was filing in connection with the S-1, in connection with the IPO?
No, and I had asked specifically to be involved, that I wanted to be involved in writing that document.
Were you asked to be involved in any way in preparing for the roadshow that the company was going to put on in connection with going public?
No, I was at no time asked to prepare the roadshow or to help in the preparation of the roadshow presentation.
Were you invited to any meetings where roadshow preparation was discussed?
No, I was not.
Were you asked for any input with respect to any of the slides that were going to be shown on the roadshow?
No, even though people who had been reporting to me were invited to those meetings.
Were you invited to any of the rehearsal sessions that may have been held at Illumina where the roadshow presentation was practiced?
No, it was very uncomfortable to me, but I was not invited to those practice presentations.
Move to strike everything after the word no.
Motion to strike granted. The jury admonished to disregard.
Were you invited to any of the rehearsal sessions where the roadshow presentation was practiced?
Asked and answered.
Sustained.
Were you asked to go on the roadshow and help with the roadshow presentation?
No, I was not.
Were you invited to sit in on and observe any of the actual roadshow presentations?
No, I was not.
What decoding experiments were being conducted at Illumina during the time of the roadshow?
Objection, Foundation.
Sustained.
In the course of your job duties as a research fellow, Dr. Zarnik, did you come to learn what experiments were being conducted during the course of the roadshow?
Yes.
What decoding experiments were being conducted during the roadshow?
Objection, Foundation.
Sustained.
What did you come to learn, Dr. Zarnik, in the course of your job duties at Illumina with respect to what was going on in the way of decoding?
The majority of the scientific and technical staff at the company were involved in an experiment called the 768 decode experiment.
Did you sit in on any meetings where the 768 decode experiment was discussed?
Yes.
Was that the first decoding experiment conducted at Illumina?
The first decoding experiment at Illumina was called the 16-bead type decode experiment.
And you were still chief science officer when that experiment was conducted?
Yes.
Over what period was the first decode experiment, the 16-bead code, conducted?
From late October of 1998 until February of 1999.
Dr. Zarnik, were you involved in the planning and preparation for the 16-bead decoding experiment?
Yes, I was.
And what role did you play with respect to the planning and preparation for that experiment?
I led the discussion with the company's scientific and technical staff on what the approaches were, what method we wanted to begin using, and how we were going to prioritize the experiments we did.
Would you take a look in your binder, please? I'm not going to show this on the screen yet. Take a look at 371 in your binder.
Mr. Pantone, could you hand me my glasses, please?
Dr. Zarnik.
Your Honor, much as I know the court doesn't wish to do sidebars, there are some specific problems with this exhibit, and—
You can't object. It's not being displayed to the jury. Then if I need a sidebar, we can do it.
Can you identify Exhibit 371?
Yes. You can't see the exhibit yet. This is a photograph of the whiteboard that was used in mid-October of 1998, and it shows the discussion that I led on how we were going to do the 16-bead type decode experiment.
When you say a whiteboard, what do you mean?
Instead of using a chalk and a chalkboard, most people these days have a whiteboard and then magic marker or markers, erasable markers, and that's what this is.
Who took this photograph?
I took it.
What's depicted on the photograph?
What's depicted is my notes in leading this discussion about the ways that we could potentially do the 16-bead decode experiment, what was going to be required in each step in order to do that experiment, and finally, as a group, how we prioritized which of those we do first.
Who was present at this discussion you led in October of 1998?
The entire scientific and technical—
Did you take this photograph on the day you made the presentation?
Just after the presentation, yes.
Move to admit Exhibit 371.
We have an objection to admission and publication of the exhibit, Your Honor.
What's the objection? What are the grounds? What's the legal grounds for the objection?
Well, we have an objection to the authenticity of the document. I've been provided with not a very clear copy, but there's nothing on it that would— We have an issue with the authenticity and genuineness of the document.
Isn't it hearsay?
It's essentially a business record. It's a documentation.
You haven't laid a foundation as a business record, counsel. There's nothing at all on the record about the foundation.
What was your purpose in taking the photograph?
I took a photograph of the whiteboard simply because it was a faster way of documenting that discussion than to have transcribed it by hand.
Did you do so for purposes of supervising the experiment?
I did that after the discussion was over. I and potentially the members of the research team would remember what we had discussed and how we had prioritized experiments.
Did you maintain this on your computer at work?
No, I didn't.
What did you do with it?
It actually stayed on the camera at work.
When did you develop it?
This was a digital picture, so it was possible to view it on computer at any time.
Did you view it from time to time during the course of your work?
Yes, I did.
For what purpose?
For the purpose of reminding me how we had strategized and in what sequence we were going to carry out experiments.
Your Honor, I again seek to have 371 admitted into evidence.
And again, we object. There's nothing on the document itself, given the copy I have, that corroborates the plaintiff's contention that this is a digital photograph taken in October of 1998. From our view, this is something that could have been created 2 weeks ago and photographed digitally. We've not been provided with a digital disc. We've simply been provided a photocopy of a whiteboard. And again, I think having never seen this before, given the fact that Illumina does not maintain business records of whiteboards, in the manner Dr. Zarnik has just testified, he allegedly created the whiteboard and photographed it, we do have a problem with admission of it.
I think it goes to credibility of the witness.
The objection is sustained.
On what basis, for the record, Judge? Hearsay?
Hearsay, and I think it doesn't qualify under the business record exception, so it's hearsay. Sustained.
In any event, Dr. Zarnik, were you involved in the planning and preparation for the 16-bead decoding experiment?
I led that planning, yes.
What was the next decoding experiment that was conducted at Illumina?
After we completed the 16-bead code, bead-type decode experiment, the company moved to a 128-bead-type decode experiment.
And can you explain to the jury what those numbers mean when you were talking about a 16-bead experiment or a 128-bead experiment?
Yes. On the end of one of these fibers, you can fit a lot of little beads. At the beginning of the company, we could fit 1,000 beads. By the time that I was fired, we could fit 50,000 beads. So the same area of the fiber, but you could get a lot more beads, so the beads got a lot smaller. Even though there were, at the end, 50,000 beads, they weren't all different. In fact, many of the beads were the same in terms of what kind of DNA was on them. So there might be 50,000 beads, but say only 10 different kinds of beads. Or in the case of the 16-bead code experiment, there were 16 kinds of beads. And in the case of the 128 decode experiment, there were 128 different kinds of beads. It just means there were many copies of each of those 128 types of beads.
Over what period was the 128-bead experiment conducted?
We worked on that experiment from about February of 1999 until about late November of 1999. And there was some work that went on beyond that date.
So you were saying for most of the year of 1999, you were working on the 128-bead experiment?
Yes.
And were you the chief science officer during that period?
Yes.
Did you express any concerns, Dr. Zarnik, with respect to the way in which the 128 decode experiment was conducted?
Yes.
Objection, hearsay.
Sustained.
Did you raise to Illumina management, senior management, any concerns that you had with respect to the validity, scientific soundness of the 128-bead experiment?
Same objection, hearsay.
Isn't this something in the nature of a prior consistent statement? There's going to be a dispute as to when these concerns were raised.
Absolutely, yes. I'm trying to establish that Dr. Zarnik began to blow the whistle early on.
Yes, I don't think it's also offered for the truth. It's also offered to show just the notice of something like that.
To show he complained.
But I think there's going to be a dispute about when the concern arose. I think this would also be his. It could be construed as a prior consistent statement.
I think this also goes to the issue we addressed some time ago in chambers, which is expression of general concerns doesn't constitute whistleblowing. We had a discussion about...
Let me see you at sidebar with the reporter. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll take our morning recess at this time. We'll be in recess until 10:15. I should have recessed before. Is everybody back? No? So we'll recess until 10:15. Remember the admonition not to form or express any opinion about the case or discuss the case. You want a longer recess than that? You want a normal 15-minute recess? We'll be in recess until 10:15. 10:15. Thank you. You may continue your examination, Mr. Pantone. We're missing a juror. The record will indicate all the jurors are now present. You may continue your examination, Mr. Pantone.
Thank you, Your Honor. Dr. Zarnik, we had been talking about the 128 decoding experiment.
Yes.
This experiment, you say, took approximately a year or so to be conducted?
Yes.
Dr. Zarnik, at any point while the 128-bead experiment was being conducted, did you raise any concerns about the dyes that were being used in the decoding experiments?
Yes.
And what concerns did you raise back in 1999 relating to the, specifically to the dyes?
I raised concerns that perhaps the dyes that we were buying weren't labeled correctly.
Did Illumina at that point in time do any quality control to check that what was in the vial of dyes that were being used was actually what was said on the label?
No, it did not.
And what, if anything, did you advocate with respect to that issue?
Objection, hearsay?
Sustained.
What did you feel the company was doing wrong? Strike that. What did you articulate to be what the company was doing wrong with respect to its use of dyes?
Objection.
In the 128 decode experiment.
Objection, hearsay.
Sustained.
To whom did you raise concerns about dyes relating to the 128 experiment?
I raised concerns to the scientific staff, to Mark Chi, to John Stupnagel, and then when Jay became the CEO, to Jay Flatley.
Over what period, Dr. Zarnik, inclusive, were you raising concerns about dyes in connection with the 128-bead experiment?
From approximately March of 1999 until December of 1999.
And you were chief scientific officer during that entire period?
Yes.
What response, if any, did you get from senior management when you raised concerns about dyes in relation to the 128-bead decoding experiment?
Objection, hearsay.
Sounds like it would be hearsay.
It's an admission.
Okay, well, subject to motion to strike.
Did you seek approval from senior management to be able to do what you said you wanted to do? That is, check that the dye was actually, the dye that was in the vials was actually what was labeled?
Leading.
Sustained.
What did you tell senior management should be done on the dye issue relating to the 128 decode experiment?
Objection. Hearsay.
It's leading. Sustained.
I'm sorry?
It's leading.
What did you say to senior management?
Objection. Hearsay.
On that issue.
It may be hearsay, subject to motion to strike. He may answer.
I said we should make sure that the dyes are correct before we use them.
Is there a motion to strike?
Motion to strike.
Self-serving hearsay. Sustained.
Again, for the record, Judge, I think it relates directly to the issue of whistleblowing.
Also lack of foundation. This has to do with the dye, so I think in light of what our chambers conference was, it passes that hurdle. But I think it's a lack of foundation, too. It's supposed to elicit a conversation to whom, when, lay a foundation. To whom was the statement made? When was it made? Who else was present? So, lack of foundation.
You said you discussed the dye issue with, among others, John Stupnagel.
Yes.
In relation to the 128 decode experiment?
Yes.
And what concerns, if any, did you raise directly to Dr. Stupnagel when he was acting president of the company that related to dyes and the 128...
I think you ought to lay a foundation as to when this conversation took place. Who else was present?
How many such conversations did you have, Dr. Zarnik, with Dr. Stupnagel, relating to dyes in connection with the 128 decode experiment?
I had 3 to 4 conversations with him.
Can you distinguish those precisely in your mind, or are they a series of discussions? How do you recall?
I recall 2 of them very distinctly.
When was the first that you recall distinctly?
The first was in late March of 1999.
Who was present?
I was there, Mark Chi was there, John Stupnagel was there, Rich Pytalewski was there.
And what, if anything, did you say on the subject of dyes at that meeting?
I said there are many reasons why it's very important for us to make sure the dye is correct before we use it.
And what reasons did you offer?
I offered the fact that while the dye itself wasn't expensive, the reactions we were going to be using them in were very expensive. Secondly, the decoding experiment that we were doing was at the limit of what our machine could measure, and if the dye was wrong, then we could be misinterpreting the results from the experiments.
And you said that at this meeting with Dr. Stupnagel, Chi, and Mr. Pytalewski?
Yes.
What response did you get to your concerns from John Stupnagel at this meeting?
The response at that meeting that I received was from Mark Chi.
Okay. What response did you receive from Mark Chi?
Mark said that testing the reagents, testing the dyes as one of the reagents, would take too long and it would slow down our progress, so we should not do it.
How long would it take to do a quality control test on a dye? Make sure it was on the, what was on the label was in the bottle.
The quick experiment would take about 5 minutes. The long experiment would involve sending a sample to an analysis lab, and we'd have the results back the next day.
Were you ever given permission to do quality control tests on dyes in connection with decoding?
No.
You say you recall a second discussion regarding dyes when the 128 experiment was being conducted and Dr. Stulpnagel was there.
Yes.
When was that discussion?
That was in about early September of 1999.
Who was present during that discussion?
Again, all four members of the senior management team were present.
Again, by name?
John Stulpnagel, Mark Chi, Rich Pytalewski, and myself.
What did you say at this meeting on the subject of dyes?
I said that because the results of decoding we were getting were so variable, we had to check the dyes to make sure that they were what was said on the vial and that they were of high purity.
What response, if any, was offered by any of the other members of senior management to your concern?
At that meeting, John said specifically that we are not going to slow down the progress of the company by doing those kinds of controlled experiments.
Did he say why?
Objection, hearsay.
Overruled, subject to motion to strike.
He said because it might slow down the rate of progress for generating results.
Did you have any discussions with Jay Flatley about the use of dyes in decoding experiments after Mr. Flatley came on board as the new CEO?
Yes.
Do you have any specific discussions in mind?
I remember best a discussion we had in mid-November of 1999.
Who was present at that discussion?
It was me and Jay.
Where did that discussion take place?
At my desk.
And what was the context? What was the purpose of the discussion?
Jay was new as the CEO, and I thought it was very important for him to know what I felt were the limitations of our current decoding method. And I wanted him to be brought up to speed because he was going to have to make decisions on both business development and how to deploy resources.
And what did you say to Mr. Flatley on that occasion with respect to dyes being used in decoding experiments?
I told Jay that the results that we were getting from decoding experiments were so variable that the people sitting around me said they were useless, and we had to check the dyes to see if they were correct.
Did you explain to Mr. Flatley what would be involved in checking the dyes to be sure they are correct?
Not in detail, but I told him it would be fast.
Did Mr. Flatley respond at that time when you raised concerns about not checking the dyes?
No, Jay didn't respond to those comments.
Now, when did the first 768 decode experiment begin?
The planning for it began in November of 1999.
When did the actual experiment start?
There was a lot of preparation for that experiment necessary, and the decoding part of that experiment really began in April of 1999.
And lasted how long?
Until approximately the middle of May of 1999.
What were the results of the first 768 decode experiment?
Objection, Foundation.
Sustained.
Did you participate in discussions involving scientists who were working on the 768 decode experiment?
Yes, I did.
How often did you participate in these discussions?
Literally every day.
Where did those discussions take place?
They took place where my desk was, which was in the room at which the majority of the scientists and engineers sat.
What was your position at that time?
At exactly what time?
When you were having these regular discussions about the 768 decode experiment.
At one point, I was chief scientific officer, and then at another point, I was research fellow.
In the course of your job duties, did you come to learn what the results were of the first 768 decode experiment?
Yes.
What were those results?
Objection, hearsay. The witness didn't conduct any of the decoding experiments, so any knowledge is based upon what others...
Did you supervise or have any role in the conducting experiments?
I had a role in analyzing the data to determine whether it was quality data or not.
Overruled.
What were the results of the first 768 decode experiment?
That there were no conclusions that could be drawn.
Was there a second set, second 768 decode experiment that began while you were still with Illumina?
Yes.
When did that experiment begin?
In approximately May of 2000.
Was that experiment still ongoing at the time you were fired, or had it been completed?
The second attempt at the 768 decode experiment had reached the point where the head of that project drew conclusions in about the middle of July, 2000.
Your Honor, I'll object to further questioning about the results of the second 768 because Dr. Zarnik said it occurred in May of 2000. It's already been established he was a research fellow.
I haven't got the results yet.
Okay, overruled at this time.
Could you please take a look at Exhibit 239? Actually, the email begins on another page. Scroll down. Dr. Zarnik, do you recognize this as an email you received from Mark Chi on June 12th? I'm sorry, an email you sent to Mark Chi on June 12th, 2000?
Yes.
What was Mark Chi's position at the time?
Mark was the vice president of genomics.
What was your position at the time?
Research fellow.
You sent this email to Mark Chi on about June 12th of 2000?
Yes.
Exhibit 249, please. Recognize Exhibit 249 as a copy of an email you sent on June 20th, 2000?
Yes.
Was this during the period of time in which the 768 decode experiment was being conducted?
The second attempt.
You sent this. Tell the jury who you sent this to, the names, and what positions those people held.
I sent this to Steve Bernard, who was an assistant director of the chemistry group, to Chanfeng Zhao, this was a senior scientist in the chemistry group, to Diping Che, who was an optical engineer and was involved in the laser and the imaging system for analyzing decoding experiments, and to David Barker, who was the chief scientific officer at the time.
There's a reminder about a dye meeting at 2 o'clock that day?
Yes.
What was the purpose of that meeting, sir?
The purpose of that meeting was to evaluate scientifically and technically whether there was a problem with the dyes that we were using for the decoding experiment.
Who attended that meeting?
The individuals who I asked to attend all attended.
Including David Barker, the chief science officer?
That's correct.
At that meeting, were any issues raised with regard to quality control and dyes?
Yes.
What, if anything, did you say on that subject at that point?
I said that the poor results that we were obtaining in decoding thus far might be due to a poor choice of dyes, or it might be due to impure dyes, and that we, at a minimum, needed to check the quality of the dyes we were using.
What does that mean, check the quality?
It means to make sure that what we bought, the material that is actually in the vial, is the same as the label says on the vial.
Now, Dr. Zarnik, at some point, did it come to your attention that there was a specific problem relating to mislabeling of dyes?
Yes.
Relating to the 768 decode experiment?
Yes.
How did it come to your attention that some of the dye had been mislabeled?
A research assistant who was working on the decode experiment came to me and asked for my help in getting a credit from the manufacturer of one of the dyes.
If you could look, please, at Exhibit 275. Do you recognize Exhibit 275?
Yes.
What is this document, sir?
This is a letter from the company that manufactured the dye, saying that while they had shipped more than 800,000 vials of dyes to different people during the company's career, they had managed to mislabel one of the dyes that they had sold to our company.
What are these products mentioned in the first line of this letter?
They are the names of the dyes.
How many dyes are referenced in this letter? How many different types of dyes?
I believe it's one product.
What is TMR-X?
TMR is an acronym for the name of the product, tetramethylrhodamine. And the X is a shorthand way of saying that it's made in a way that makes it easy to attach to the DNA.
Dr. Zarnik, you have any particular background or expertise that specifically relates to using dyes in chemical and biological experiments?
I have been doing work on the synthesis and use of fluorescent dyes for my entire scientific career, 25 years. It's so a part of my career that when I bought an engagement ring for my wife...
I'm sorry for interrupting the witness, but I don't think the engagement ring for the wife has anything to do with his experience with fluorescence. Move to strike after the word 25 years.
He could explain in lay terms how significant of an area this is.
Objection, relevance.
I'll let him complete his answer, subject to motion to strike.
When my wife and I were selecting diamonds for our engagement, there was one dye, one diamond that was labeled as having a defect. And this was a defect that made the diamond glow under a black light. It was fluorescent. So that was the diamond that we bought.
What specific experience or background or expertise do you have? Explain to the jury that bears directly on using dyes for these types of scientific experiments.
In graduate school, my project was on making dyes and in making DNA that had fluorescent dyes on them. So most of my graduate career was based on that area. My training was in organic chemistry, and it sensitized me to the fact that what you buy from a vendor isn't always what it says on the bottle, and it's important to check that those are correct. When I moved from graduate school to my postgraduate work, I worked on fluorescent methods for looking at enzyme reactions. And then when I moved to Ohio State University as a professor, I spent almost half of my research on synthesizing new fluorescent dyes that were sensors for other molecules.
Do you have any work experience that directly relates to the use of dyes in scientific experiments other than what you've testified to?
Yes.
What is that?
When I left the university, I moved to Parke Davis Pharmaceutical Company, and my group developed methods using fluorescent dyes to search for new drugs. After that, I moved to Irori, a startup company. They hired me in large part because of my experience in fluorescence, to create new ways of combining combinatorial chemistry and fluorescence, ways of searching for drugs. And certainly, I was hired at Illumina in large part because I'm an expert in the use of fluorescent dyes.
What about in your current employment?
My current employment is at Sensors for Medicine and Science, and the technology is completely based on the use of fluorescence and fluorescent dyes for measuring things like oxygen and glucose.
Now, can you explain to the jury in as simple terms as you can how the dyes were actually used in decoding experiments at Illumina?
Once you've assembled the beads into this fiber optic, you know how many beads are there. But you can't tell just by looking at the bead what kind of DNA is on it. And that array only becomes useful for that type of experiment if you can create a map that says, on this bead is this type of DNA, and on this bead is a different type of DNA, and on this bead is a different type of DNA. And to do that for most of the beads, the way that we create that map is by putting fluorescent dyes on a different DNA. This is a kind of DNA that can bind to the DNA that's on the bead. And after we've made that fluorescently labeled DNA, we essentially put that whole bead array into a solution. We let the fluorescently labeled DNA in solution stick onto the right beads, and then we look under a kind of microscope, and we look to see what color is on each bead. The way that we've designed the experiment is that the color that is on a given bead tells us a piece of information about what kind of DNA is on that bead. We then complete the series of experiments over and over until we've gotten enough information about these colors that we can then step back and say, okay, now we can say that this is the kind of DNA that's on that particular bead.
Dr. Zarnik, this letter from... You say Molecular Probes is the vendor who sold the dye to Illumina?
Yes, that's correct.
This is dated July 24th, 2000.
That's correct.
This is the was the roadshow ongoing at that point in time?
Yes.
And approximately when, in relation to this date of July 24th, 2000, approximately when did you find out that there had been mislabeling of the dye?
It had been about 2 days before the date of this letter.
So on or about July 22nd of 2000?
Yes.
How did you come to learn for the first time about the mislabeling issue?
Well, Monica, who was the research assistant that this letter was written to, and said that we had received mislabeled dye, and she wanted to know if I could help her get a credit because they had sent us a bad...
What's Monica's last name?
I'm afraid I've forgotten.
Let's look, please, at Exhibit 276. Do you recognize the bottom email, the email you sent on or about July 26, 2000, to Dipping Che?
Yes.
Who is Dipping Che?
Dipping Che is an optical engineer who works at Illumina and was intimately involved in the decoding experiments.
What was your purpose in sending this email to Dr. Che?
Well, I had come to learn that the results of the 768 decode experiment, this second sampling, second attempt, was very poor. And Dipping was the person who knew the instrument that we would use to measure the colors. He's the guy who would sort of first know whether the colors were different than what were expected. I wrote to him to ask, does it look like this experiment is bad because the dyes were actually bad, or one of the dyes was bad?
Is this the response you received from Dr. Che?
Yes.
Same day, July 26th, 2000?
Yes.
Dr. Zarnik, did you ever form a belief that the results from the 768 decode experiment had been sent to the roadshow team?
Yes.
And can you tell the jury why you formed a belief that the results from that 768 decode experiment had actually been sent to the roadshow team?
At Illumina, we called the 768 decode experiment the roadshow experiment. It was done specifically so that the team on the roadshow would be able to say, we can decode a lot of beads, and that's because if Illumina couldn't decode a lot of beads, this aspect of the technology wouldn't be valuable. So when the experiment was completed, it was certainly my understanding, expectation, that these results would be sent to the roadshow team as soon as possible. In fact, the hope had been to give the results to them before the roadshow began.
How do you know that had been the hope?
I knew that from sitting in on scientific meetings where Mark Chi said, "We want to get this done before the roadshow team leaves." That's one example.
Did you participate in any discussions with senior management about the importance to the company of completing the 768 decode experiment before the roadshow began?
I had participated in the discussion with David Barker about the importance of getting this done before the roadshow began.
What did Dr. Barker say to you?
Simply that it would be extremely valuable for the company if they were able to have these results before presentations were made to investors.
Let's take a look at Exhibit 269, please.
261, Counsel?
269. Exhibit 269 is a copy of an email, July 13, 2000, from Mark Chi. Had the roadshow begun by July 13, 2000?
Yes.
This email is sent to Jay Flatley, David Barker, John Stulpnagel, Timothy Kish. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And copies to Ms. Espinoza and Mr. Kane?
That's correct.
Were you ever copied on this particular email?
No.
At the time, did you know this email, this specific email, had been sent?
Objection. Relevance.
Sustained.
Had you been involved in discussions involving Mark Chi about his intention, if any, to send the results of the 768 decode experiment to the roadshow team?
Mark had voiced the intention to give the roadshow team these results as soon as they were available.
If we could move to the next page, please. And the page after that, the actual attachment. We're going to have to use the board for this one.
What's the exhibit you're going to show to the jury?
It's part of 269, the attachment to the email. This is a document with bait stamp label Illumina 1560. Now, Dr. Zarnik, did you form the belief that the mislabeling of the dyes in connection with the 768 decode experiment in any way called into question the results of that experiment?
Yes.
Can you explain to the jury why you believe that the mislabeling of the dye in any way compromised the 768 decode experiment?
There are two general reasons and several specific. Let me go with the general ones first. I had concerns with the quality of our data from the 128 decode experiment.
Objection. Move to strike.
Motion to strike granted. The jury is to disregard the answer. It is stricken.
The results from...
Can you explain...
I think it goes to state of mind, Judge.
Have you explained the previous rulings of the court to the witness?
I have. Not in this context.
There's to be no mention of any generalized criticisms you have about the research methodology. Testimony has been confined to the dye issue.
Will you explain to the jury why you thought that the mislabeling of the dye was a problem in the 768?
The mislabeling of the dye was a problem because decoding requires that we be able to tell what color a bead is at each stage of decoding, and it is the dye that gives the color to the bead. We were working at the limit of how small of a bead we could be observing, and it was essential that we not be hampered by things we could control, such as whether the dye was right, because we were already hampered by working at the limit of what the machine could measure.
Now, assuming, and I believe we'll be able to prove this up through other evidence, but assuming that this document on this board is the PowerPoint slide that was sent by Mark Chi to the roadshow team during the roadshow, could you come down, please, and describe for the jury in what sense you believe this slide would be misleading because of the mislabeling issue?
May I do that?
Yes.
The decoding essentially requires a series of pictures, and this is an overlay of several pictures that tells us what color each bead is. It's the series of those colors that tells us what DNA is on that bead. The first thing you'll note is that while the experiment had been done using three colors of dye, there are more than three colors in this picture.
What colors were used, to your knowledge, in the 768 decode experiment?
The colors of the dyes were red, green, and blue. So as you look at these, and this is a blow-up of a particularly good region, you'll see the colors red and green and blue. But you also see yellow, you see white, you see purple, you see colors other than the three colors of the dyes that were used. And if the three dyes were right, and if this experiment had worked well, we should have observed three colors. Secondly, you'll note that the size of the spots varies tremendously. So some of these spots are large, meaning that there was very bright color on that bead. Some of the sizes are mid-size. Some of them are small. and some of them are so dim that you don't know whether there's a color there or not. So the variation of the color on this slide is indicative of an experiment that for which there is a problem. Can I talk about the analysis of the results from using the dyes at this point?
Well, do you know whether the mislabeling of the dye issue affected the way the data was analyzed?
Yes.
Will you explain that, please?
The way that the colors from these experiments were analyzed was by having a computer collect all of these colors and brightnesses. And then, after having all of that sitting in front of you, deciding which beads to say were good and which beads were bad based on what it is you wanted to see. So the beads that were chosen to say, this is a bead whose data I'm going to use, was based on beads that gave the results that the lead scientist wanted to see. Other beads that didn't give the results that were desired, the data from those beads was simply thrown away.
By the way, are you familiar with this basic graphic way of depicting decoding? Have you seen these types of slides in earlier experiments?
Many times.
Okay, thank you, Doctor. Could we please take a look at Exhibit 265? Exhibit 265 is a copy of an email dated July 8, 2000, from Jay Flatley to all of us. You testified earlier all of us meant the entire company.
Yes.
Did you receive a copy of this email from Mr. Flatley?
Yes.
And this email indicates that while Jay Flatley and others were gone on the roadshow, Mark Chi will be in charge of the company?
That's correct.
So, Dr. Zarnik, what, if anything, did you do after learning that one of the dyes used in the 768 decode experiment had been mislabeled?
Well, when I first learned of the mislabeling, within 20 minutes I found Mark Chi, who was on site.
Why Mark Chi?
Because Mark was the head of the company. He was the head of the decode experiment, and he had the information with which to contact the roadshow team immediately.
Did you speak to Mark Chi about this?
Yes.
Tell the jury, please, what you said to Mark Chi.
First, I asked Mark if he was aware of the mislabeled dye, and he said that yes, he was aware of it. I said this could really mess up the decode experiment, the results. It was essential that Mark contact the roadshow team as soon as possible to make sure that they no longer use that data in the roadshow, because if they did use that data, it might be construed as a defraud of investors.
Is that what you said to Mark Chi or what you were thinking?
No, that's what I said to Mark.
What specifically did you ask Mark Chi to do?
I didn't so much ask Mark as I emphatically insisted that he call the roadshow team and make sure that they were aware of this problem so that they didn't use the data any further.
Did you specifically use the word fraud?
Yes.
What response, if any, did Mark Chi give to you?
Mark had told me he was aware of the reagent problem. And then, after I made those comments to him, Mark simply looked back at me and really didn't give a verbal response.
Approximately when was it, Dr. Zarnik, that you had this discussion with Mark Chi?
It was very shortly after I learned of the results. It was a day or two before the letter was dated from molecular probes.
We saw earlier the letter was dated July 24th, 2000.
Right.
So with that in mind, can you tell the jury approximately when it was that you had this discussion with Mark Chi?
It may have been July 21st. It may have been July 22nd.
Somewhere in that time frame.
Right.
Do you know, Dr. Zarnik, one way or another, whether this slide was actually used on the roadshow? The one that Mark Chi sent to the roadshow team?
The experiment was done for the roadshow, but I never attended any of the roadshow sessions, and so I wasn't physically there to know if it was used.
Do you recall the date on which Illumina went public? When the IPO was?
On July 28.
2000?
Yes.
Exhibit 278, please. You recognize Exhibit 278?
Yes.
What is Exhibit 278?
This is the first page of what is called the prospectus for this initial public offering. It is the booklet that is given to potential investors, if they ask for it, to describe what the company is about, what it does, what its prospects are.
We had talked earlier in your testimony about whether you were or you were not listed as a founder in various documents. Do you recall that?
Yes.
Including the S-1 registration statement?
Correct.
In this prospectus, sir, are you listed as a founder of the company?
Yes.
Were you invited to go to New York City in connection with any commemoration of Illumina's IPO?
No.
Any sort of celebration or event held at Illumina, physically at the Illumina property?
Yes.
In connection with the IPO?
Yes.
How did that come about?
I realized, after Mark left to join the group in New York, that while there had been a party planned for that night, basically welcoming home our victorious roadshow team, that nothing had been planned at the company for the moment when the stock began trading. And the management team just hadn't thought about the employees, what they might do. Excuse me. There was nothing. There were no plans made to celebrate the moment at which the stock began trading. So the evening before, my wife suggested that we should really have champagne because it's a big moment for a company. So the two of us went out, bought a couple of cases of champagne, brought it into the company that night, left it in the cold room so the champagne would be cold, and the moment at which the trading of the stock began, we were able to pop corks and have champagne flowing, and it was really nice.
Now, after the IPO, I take it the roadshow team returned back to Illumina.
Yes, late on the night of the 28th.
After Mr. Flatley returned to Illumina, did you resume your weekly meeting with Jay Flatley?
Yes.
Exhibit 285, please. Do you recognize this as an email you sent to Jay Flatley on August 1st of 2000?
Yes.
This was a few days after the roadshow.
Yes.
Completed. And a few days after the IPO?
Yes.
And in your email, you request an earlier time for your scheduled meeting?
Yes.
This is Jay Flatley's response to you, that he preferred to hold the meeting at 6 p.m.?
That's correct.
Exhibit 262, please. By the way, why were you requesting an earlier time for your meeting?
Since April of 1999, I have had a stress headache that feels like a vice every afternoon. And meeting with Jay at 6 o'clock under these circumstances, while this headache was going on, was difficult. And so I simply had hoped to be meeting with Jay in the morning rather than in the evening.
In fact, you noted that in the email that you had sent to Mr. Flatley.
Yes, that's right.
Let's move to 262, please. Is this an email you sent to Deborah Flamino on July 5th?
Yes, it is.
Asking a series of questions?
Yes.
What was Deborah Flamino's position at this time?
She was head of human resources at Illumina.
Scroll up, please. This is Ms. Flamino's response to you?
That's correct.
Next page, please. Scroll down to the bottom. That's a repeat of the same message you had sent to Ms. Flamino in early July?
And had copied Jay on.
Scroll up, please. Is this Jay Flatley's response to you?
Yes.
Sent on August 1st of 2000.
That's correct.
Did you get any response from Jay Flatley in the 3 or 4 weeks in between these two emails?
Not on the questions raised in this email.
By the way, Mr. Flatley's email refers to a performance program. Is that right?
Yes.
Had you heard that term from Jay Flatley prior to August 1st of 2000?
Not in the context of my employment, no.
When Mr. Flatley gave you the initial 30, 60, 90-day goals and the year goals, did he tell you you were on a performance program?
No.
Or performance plan?
No.
Exhibit 283, please. Do you recognize Exhibit 283?
Yes.
This is a copy of a memo from Jay Flatley dated August 1st of 2000 to you and copied to your personnel file?
That's correct.
Regarding review of progress on 30-day goals due June 19th of 2000?
Yes.
Is this August 1st of 2000 the first written feedback you got from Jay Flatley on your goals?
Yes.
Scroll down, please. You note in the text that Mr. Flatley says that he received your work plan on July 11th?
That's what it says.
That was your plan about how you go about meeting your goals?
Exactly.
And Mr. Flatley says, I owe you feedback on this plan. Hadn't Mr. Flatley given you any feedback previously on your work plan?
None.
Exhibit 291, please. Is this a copy of a memo you received about a week later, on August 8th of 2000?
Yes.
From Mr. Flatley, with a copy to your personnel file?
That's correct.
A week later, Mr. Flatley is reviewing your progress toward the 60-day goals?
That's correct.
Exhibit 294, please. What is this document, sir? Exhibit 294.
This is the memo that I placed in my personal file to rebut the comments that Jay had made.
This was specifically in response to the first memo that Jay Flatley gave you reviewing your 30-day goals?
Yes.
Who did you send this memo to?
If I remember, I actually sent this to my personnel file and copied Jay.
How do you send something to your personnel file?
That's a good question.
Thanks. Maybe my first one. How did you do that?
That's a real question?
That's a real question.
I gave the memo to Deborah Flamino with a note asking her to put it in my personnel file and then gave Jay a copy.
Exhibit 303, please. Can you tell us what Exhibit 303 is, sir?
Yep. This is the memo that I wrote in response to Jay's comments of August 8th. And this one I sent to Jay and copied my personnel file.
This is in response to his memo dealing with your progress toward the 60-day goal?
Right.
Now, Dr. Zarnik, at any point in time while you were having these weekly meetings with Jay Flatley, did you ask to have a witness present?
Yes.
Did you ask for that in writing? Did you ask Jay Flatley orally or in writing?
I asked Jay in writing.
What essentially, tell the jury essentially what you were asking for.
I asked Jay if I could have one of my co-workers present in my meetings with him. That was it.
What was your purpose in wanting a witness?
I felt if I had a co-worker with me in the room, that Jay would be more civil in the discussions that we were having.
Had Jay Flatley been uncivil?
Yes.
Can you describe for the jury how he was generally behaving in these weekly meetings?
Jay was demeaning. At one point, I had shown Jay the results of work I'd done, and he said, "Looks like that took you about one day. What did you do all the rest of the days?" I just wanted someone in there with me to make Jay behave in a better way.
What response did you get from Jay Flatley to your request to have a witness of your choosing in the meeting?
Jay said that if I wanted a witness, he would supply a witness. But it would be a witness of his choosing, and it would be someone from either HR or from the senior management team.
Do you recall at some point Mr. Flatley suggested maybe some neutral facilitator from outside the company?
Yes, he did in one of the memos he placed in my personnel file.
Were you ever allowed to have a witness of your own choosing at the weekly meetings?
No. Jay specifically said no, forbade it.
Please take a look at Exhibit 299. You recognize this document, Dr. Zarnik?
Yes, I do.
Is this an email you sent to Jay Flatley on or about August 11th of 2000?
Yes, I did.
And you referenced the RK laser. Is that the argon krypton laser?
As it's commonly known, yes.
This was the piece of equipment that you had indicated earlier you thought would help you achieve your goals?
That I needed in order to carry out the experiments.
Had the argon krypton laser arrived at Illumina at this point?
No, it was going to arrive the next week.
Who is the Diping reference to?
Diping Che, the optical engineer who really had the most experience in terms of setting up lasers and optical systems.
Did you work with Diping Che to schedule experiments in this area?
Yes, I had been working with Diping ever since his arrival at Illumina, strategizing in solving problems on the equipment, and I arranged to have him help us run the first experiments on this new piece of equipment.
Exhibit 309, please. Exhibit 309, is this a copy of an email you sent to Jay Flatley on August 17th, 2000?
Yes.
So in terms of timing, this was, what, approximately 2 weeks or so before you were fired?
Yes.
What was your purpose in sending this email?
To let Jay know that there had been a lot of research accomplished, to let him know the exact status on the two experimental projects I was working on, and to, frankly, let him know that it was looking very encouraging and that I was really optimistic about the experiments.
Your email states you were able to work with Diping using the argon krypton laser system. Is that right?
That's correct.
When did you start using that argon krypton laser that you needed?
It would have been early this week, the week of August 17th.
So 2 to 3 weeks before you were fired?
Yes.
If we could skip to Exhibit 272. I'm sorry, 315. Is this a copy of an email that you sent to David Walt on August 25th, 2000?
Yes, it is.
We heard Dr. Walt testify yesterday. He, at this point in time, was a director, major shareholder, and chair of the Scientific Advisory Board?
Yes, that's correct.
What was your purpose in sending this email to Dr. Walt on August 25th, 2000?
Based on the experiments that the scientists were proposing at Illumina, it seemed to me that the concerns that I had been raising about variability, excuse me, concerns that I had been raising weren't being addressed, weren't even being heard. David was a friend. I still consider David a friend. He was literally the highest scientific position at the company. And I thought it was essential for him to know that the problems of decoding were not being addressed at Illumina.
In the second paragraph, you make reference to what you thought was Jay's pronouncement at the April board meeting.
Yes.
Again, the source of your information on what Jay said at the April board meeting came from who?
From David.
Did you ever get any response from David Walt to this email?
No, I didn't receive any response. That was a sad day.
Can you identify what this exhibit is, Dr. Zarnik?
This is my lab notebook from Illumina.
Over what period did you use this lab notebook?
During the summer of 2000.
While you were working toward your...
Right.
If we could scroll through this for your benefit, what generally did you include in your lab notebook?
I included a description of the experiment I was going to do, description of the reagents I was using for doing the experiment, where the reagent came from, how the experiment was done, and then in most cases, the results of that experiment.
All right. Did you ever discuss your lab notebook with Jay Flatley?
Yes, I did.
Do you recall when that happened?
Near the end of August, during my weekly meeting with Jay, he asked me how progress was going, and I said progress was going very well, and I was really enthusiastic about the results that were coming out. Jay didn't seem to want to hear about that. He just wanted to see my lab notebook. So I went back to my desk, got my lab notebook, brought it back, and Jay spent about 5 minutes paging through it.
Did Jay Flatley make any comments with respect to your lab notebook?
Well, this was the meeting where Jay said, "What did you do the other 89 days?
Was this meeting you were describing, was that the last weekly meeting you had with Jay Flatley before you were fired?
No, it was the second to last.
When was the last meeting you had with Jay Flatley before your termination?
It was the meeting at which I was terminated.
Okay, so the meeting you just described was the last you had before the termination meeting?
Yes.
Do you recall anything else discussed at that meeting in late August 2000, your last weekly meeting with Jay Flatley before your termination?
Jay had paged through the lab notebook and hadn't made any comments about what was in the notebook, except for saying this business about, you know, what did you do the other 89 days? And he said, "I want you to give me every scrap of paper that you've worked on, any graphs, any analyses, any calculations. I want you to give me everything that you've worked on and give it to me."
Exhibit 320, please. Is this an email that you sent to Jay Flatley on August 30th, 2000?
Yes.
And there's an attachment?
Yes.
What is the attachment?
The entire company was in the process of doing self-evaluations. A lot of companies have this, where annually managers will tell their employees how they've been doing. And the first step in a lot of these is for the employees to say, "This is what I've accomplished. This is why I think I've done well. These are things that have been problems. This is why I think I deserve a big raise," basically. And Deborah Flamino had just a day or two before sent out a reminder for the whole company that this was due, and they should be sending it to their advisor immediately, and I wanted to get mine in.
What was your purpose in forwarding this on to Jay Flatley on August 30th?
Well, actually, I sent this to Jay simply because he was my supervisor, and you sent it to your supervisor and a copy to HR.
Your email says, "Here's the material you requested."
I'm sorry?
What request, if any, did Jay make?
Jay asked me for all this material, and I asked Jay if what he meant was like a performance evaluation. And Jay said yes, it would be part of a performance self-evaluation. So I wrote out my performance self-evaluation and sent it. And that's what this is. That's what that note refers to.
Scroll through the rest of the exhibit. Is this the actual performance, the self-performance appraisal that was attached to your email?
Yes.
And Dr. Zarnik, does this describe the activities that you were engaged in during your 30, 60, 90-day goal period?
Yes.
What is this section?
This is a standard heading to the performance self-evaluation that says, "What do you think are your major accomplishments during this period of evaluation?"
The review period is beginning May 17th?
That's right.
You got your new goals from Jay Flatley on May 19th.
That's correct.
Now, Dr. Zarnik, did you attend a meeting of the entire Illumina staff that was conducted by Jay Flatley on September 1st, 2000, a few days before your termination?
It was an all-company meeting.
Where was the meeting held?
It was held in a conference room on the third floor of the building that Illumina was occupying.
And did Jay Flatley make any statements at that all-company meeting that related to the 768 decoding experiment?
Objection, hearsay.
Sustained.
Did Jay Flatley make any statement at that all-company meeting to indicate that he was aware of the problems relating to the 768 decoding experiment?
Objection, leading, hearsay.
You can just answer that yes or no.
Would you please repeat that?
Did he make any statement he was aware of the 768 decoding experiment?
He made statements that he knew decoding was a big problem.
What did Jay Flatley say at this all-company meeting on that subject?
Same objection.
Overruled.
Jay said that solving the problems of decoding was the biggest issue facing Illumina, and that it was a 4 on a scale of 1 to 3.
Is that really consistent with the previous response, that's a problem with decoding?
No. Motion to strike.
Motion to strike granted.
The testimony was it was the biggest problem facing the company.
This doesn't have to do with a dye issue, Your Honor.
Can I have the last response read back? I don't think that's an admission, so the motion to strike is granted.
Instruction to the jury, please?
I think it's sufficient.
Look at Exhibit 332, please. Do you recognize this document as an email you sent to Mark Chi on September 5th, 2000?
Yes.
Your email is actually at the bottom here, correct?
Yes.
You are stating to Mark Chi, Jay was out of town when we learned the Roadshow decode experiment was flawed. We're now aware of the problem. When did you let him know?
Right.
What was your state of mind, Dr. Zarnik, in terms of why you were asking these questions?
Jay had made the statement at a company meeting that decoding was the biggest problem facing the company to be solved. And I was actually very happy at that moment because...
Your Honor, I'm going to move the first portion of the witness's answer.
Motion to strike is granted.
May I be heard on that issue, please?
Let's have a sidebar on that issue. We're going to take our noon recess at this time. We'll be in recess until 1:15. Please remember the admonition not to form or express any opinions about the case, not to discuss the case amongst yourselves or with anyone else. We'll be in recess until 1:15. All right. Record will indicate all jurors are present, counsel and parties present. Can we display that last exhibit? Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, in connection with this exhibit here, which is, what is it?
332.
332. I'm going to give you what's known as a limiting instruction. Now, that means you can consider the exhibit only for some purpose, but not for other purposes. For instance, in this case, as you may already know, there's an issue of whether or not this conversation between Dr. Zarnik and Dr. Chi actually took place in the evidence on or about July 21st or 22nd. That's the conversation regarding, allegedly regarding, failure to disclose the problem with the experiment at or about the time of the roadshow. So, in considering this exhibit, 332, the only purpose that you can consider the statements is one by Dr. Chi and one by Dr. Zarnik is just to prove that the statements were made, but not to prove the truth of the matter asserted. In other words, for example, Dr. Zarnik's statement alluded to the fact that this conversation took place. Dr. Chi's statement says it didn't take place. You can't consider this evidence to prove whether or not the conversation took place. You can only consider it to show that what was said was said. But not, you can't consider it for the truth of whether or not the conversations took place. So that limiting instruction applies to this entire exhibit. Similarly, we're going to allow Dr. Zarnik to testify about statements that he says were made by Mr. Flatley at the meeting of all employees of the company about... That has to do with the subject of decoding experiments. That statement is not to be admitted. That evidence is only admitted. It's going to be received for the sole purpose, as it shows what Dr. Zarnik's state of mind was, but not for any other purpose. In other words, not to be... It's not offered to prove that the statement was made. But Dr. Zarnik will testify about how it affected his state of mind. So, you can only consider it as evidence of his state of mind, but not for the proof of the matter that the statement was made. You want to proceed then, Mr. Pantone?
Yes, thank you, Your Honor. Dr. Zarnik, looking again at Exhibit 332, which is displayed, your email to Mark Chi on September 5th, 2000.
Yes.
You sent it to Mark Chi on that date?
Yes.
And this is the response you received from Mark Chi.
It appears to be the response. I didn't get it at Illumina.
Where did you get it?
I saw it among documents that were produced.
Now, in your email to Mark Chi, you ask Mark whether Jay is now aware of the problem, right?
Right.
What was your state of mind in terms of why you were asking Mark Chi that question on September 5th, 2000?
On the all-company meeting on September 1st, Jay had said that we were going to work on decoding because it was the biggest, it was a big problem for the company. He, at that meeting, assigned a team of people who were going to be addressing the decoding problem. That team was headed by Steve Bernard and included two or three other technical people in the company. So at that meeting, I actually felt quite good that we were going to address this problem. Then, on the 5th, that was over Labor Day weekend, so the 1st was a Friday and the 5th was a Tuesday. Coming back from Labor Day weekend, I had actually spent some time that weekend thinking about decoding and coming up with potential solutions. And early in the afternoon, I talked with Steve Barnard about his role as heading up the decoding team.
We may be heading into hearsay statement.
This is a narrative at this point, so why don't you ask another question?
I'd be offering this just for state of mind purposes, not for the truth of the matter asserted.
Okay.
You mentioned a decoding team that Jay Flatley had implemented at about this time.
Announced it on September 1st.
Were you made a part of that decoding team?
No.
I believe you said you had a conversation with Steve Barnard on September 5th of 2000.
Yes.
And was Steve Barnard on that decoding team?
Yes, he was head of that team.
Now, did Steve Barnard say anything to you on September 5th, which in any way caused you to send this email to Mark Chi, dated September 5th?
Yes.
What did Steve Barnard say to you on that date?
I had asked Steve how he was going to go about working on the decoding problem, and Steve told me that in his conversations with Jay, who had appointed him to the head of that group, Jay seemed to believe that the 768 decode...
Oh, hold on for a second. That seems like inadmissible opinion. It's getting into inadmissible opinion. It's hearsay. It's one witness saying what another witness said.
Seemed. It's one witness. Dr. Zarnik saying that Dr. Barnard said to him that it seemed to Barnard.
Yes, his conclusion, which is objectionable.
May I continue? Have the witness, rather, continue with that discussion without alluding to...
Just frame a question that will elicit the information in a way that's proper.
I simply want to know what, if anything, did Steve Barnard say to you with respect to the 768 decode experiment?
That's going to get us into the same problem we're just in, isn't it?
Yes.
That caused you to send this email? Again, I don't offer it for the truth of the matter asserted.
Its limited purpose is for the state of mind of the witness... Try to avoid saying anything about his opinion about someone else's state of mind.
Okay. Steve was going to begin working on the decoding as if the 768 decode experiment had worked fine.
Did Steve, again, pursuant to the judge's instructions, don't tell me what Steve may have speculated. Did Steve Barnard make any statement to you about the 768 decode experiment, which made you send this email to Mark Chi? This email, dated September 5th.
Yes.
What did he say?
Steve said he was to begin working on decoding, picking up where the previous team had left off, picking up based on the results that they had obtained.
So your testimony is, based on what you heard at the all-company meeting and what Steve Barnard told you, you sent this email to Mark Chi?
Yes.
Let's look at Exhibit 327. It's actually page 3 of 327. Is this a copy of a September 5th, 2000 email you sent to Jay Flatley?
Yes.
On that date?
Yes.
What was your purpose in sending this email, Dr. Zarnik?
Jay had asked me for some specific materials, results of my experiments, so the main purpose was to let him know that I had placed the things he was asking for in his mailbox.
When did he make that request?
About 5 days earlier.
You sent it to Jay Flatley about 5 o'clock in the evening?
It would have been 6 days earlier. Excuse me.
You sent this email to Jay Flatley 5 o'clock that evening?
Yes.
Did you receive a response?
Again, I didn't see this response, but this is what appeared in Discovery.
His response, September 5th, 2000?
Yes.
You didn't see that day?
No.
What date was your employment with Illumina terminated?
On September 5th, 2000.
How were you informed your employment was terminated?
At a meeting that occurred in Jay Flatley's office. Present were, well, at the meeting at Jay Flatley's office.
Who was at the meeting?
Jay Flatley, Deborah Flamino, and me.
What time was the meeting, do you recall?
It began at 6 o'clock.
And who opened the meeting?
Jay opened the meeting.
What did Jay say at this meeting?
Jay started by asking me if I had done any more experiments since he had reviewed my lab book the previous week.
What was your response?
Yes, I had.
By the way, had you given any of the information with respect to those experiments to Jay Flatley?
I had put the stack of experimental results that Jay asked for in his mailbox an hour earlier.
All right. And after inquiring about whether you had done any more experiments or any more results, what, if anything, did Jay Flatley say at the termination meeting?
Jay told me that he was going to terminate my employment.
Did he say why?
He said it was because I hadn't achieved my goals.
At this termination meeting, Dr. Zarnik, didn't Jay Flatley make any reference to dyes or reagents?
Yes.
Tell the jury, please, what Jay Flatley said to you on that subject at the termination meeting.
Jay looked at me and said, "I understand you've been making some strong statements about decoding. If you tell anyone outside of the company about the reagent problem, the company will go after you with everything it has."
Did you respond to that?
No, it was pretty shocking.
How long was the termination meeting?
A total of about 15 minutes.
At the termination meeting, did Jay Flatley make an offer to you of any sort of severance?
Yes, Jay offered that if we would just settle the complaint that I had about the company, he would offer me 3 months' worth of stock.
Did he mention anything about salary?
No, I'm sorry, I take that back. He did. Jay said that he was going to pay the...
I'll object. This will be a hearsay statement.
In terms of... withdraw the question. In terms of making a severance proposal, did he offer you salary in addition to stock?
No.
Did Jay Flatley tell you anything about what he perceived to be the value of the severance offer he was making?
Objection. Hearsay. Relevance.
Are these settlement discussions?
We've had plenty of testimony.
I know. I think I'm going to need an offer of proof outside the presence of the jury. Ladies and gentlemen, all the testimony you heard so far about the September 5th conversation is stricken. We're going to start all over with a clean slate, and Mr. Pantone is going to be allowed
to... The entire conversation? There were many subjects.
Just as it relates to possible settlement of the case, those considerations are stricken.
I don't need to revisit what he said about the reasons or decoding.
All that is still in. And now about the settlement discussions that Mr. Pantone is going to ask a few very targeted questions to elicit information. That will be admissible.
Dr. Zarnik, at the termination meeting on September 5th, 2000, the meeting in which Jay... Dr. Zarnik, at the termination meeting on September 5th, 2000, the meeting in which Jay Flatley informed you that you were fired, without telling us the terms of any proposal made by Mr. Flatley, did Mr. Flatley make you a severance proposal at the termination meeting?
You can probably answer these questions yes or no.
Yes.
This was at the same meeting in which he fired you?
Yes.
Did you accept Mr. Flatley's offer of severance that he made at the termination?
No.
You say the termination meeting took about 15 minutes?
Yes.
And what happened after the meeting?
I was escorted to the garage by Deborah Flamino.
If we could please take a look at Exhibit 339. Do you recognize Exhibit 339?
Yes.
Is this a letter that you received, dated September 12th, 2000?
Yes.
From Illumina?
Yes.
Scroll up, please. And the letter is from Connie Brick, Illumina's Director of Finance.
Correct.
This was a letter by which Illumina repurchased shares of stock that you had owned in the company?
That's correct.
Is it accurate that as of this date, prior to the offer, prior to the repurchase, you owned a total of 425,000 shares?
Objection calls for a legal conclusion.
You are just asking how many shares he owned? I think it's permissible for the owner to give an opinion in that regard. Overruled.
Yes, that's the amount.
And you did have a contract with Illumina, whereby the company could repurchase certain shares in the event that your employment terminated, right?
Yes.
Is it true that at least your understanding was that as time went on, as you continued to work with the company would lose its right to repurchase a certain number of those shares every month?
Yes.
The company included a check for $4,516.67 in this letter.
Yes.
And it was to repurchase 226,667 shares at a penny a share and 25,000 shares at 9 cents a share?
That's correct.
What was the market value of the shares that were repurchased by Illumina in September 2000, based on the price at which the stock was trading publicly?
Objection, Foundation, Relevance 352.
Are we going to have expert testimony later on the value of the shares?
We will, Your Honor.
I think under 352, there's so many possible qualifiers. I think the experts are better suited.
I don't think there's any dispute about what the value was, Judge. We dealt with this in limine. We could all do the math.
Just the market value?
Yes, that's all.
You are not asking about the effect of any restrictions?
No.
The market value, he can answer that if he knows. What Illumina, what they would have been listed at in the paper if you looked it up in the financial pages.
Exactly.
Foundational objection stands.
Overruled, if you know. Do you know?
Yes, I do know. On the date of that letter, the shares that were repurchased were worth a little over $10 million.
Did you ever cash that check for $4,516.67?
Objection, relevance.
Sustained.
Goes to emotional distress, which we're going to get into.
Same objection.
Overruled, you may answer.
No, I never cashed that check.
Dr. Zarnik, did the events you described in this trial, including the termination of your employment, did it affect you emotionally?
Yes.
Can you describe to the jury the impact that the events that you've testified to had on you emotionally?
It would be hard to exaggerate it. I was powerfully betrayed and felt a powerful feeling of betrayal. Having founded this company, having been involved with people from the very beginning, I was extraordinarily hurt, and maybe most of all, very disillusioned with this whole process. I was lucky enough to have been a founder of a company that was successful and then got booted from it, and that was extraordinarily difficult to accept. Also, I felt very saddened by the injustice of having been doing what was, in my opinion, an excellent job moving the company's science forward and coming to the realization that that wasn't valued. So I felt very disillusioned by that. It's hard to get this out of my mind. I can't get it out of my mind. One of the reasons for this trial is to help me lose the emotional part that's associated with the extraordinary injustice of it. And it's taken a toll on my marriage, which I don't need to elaborate on. Just an extraordinarily painful incident, and one that I wasn't simply going to say was okay. I was never hurt in an open forum like this.
Do you have any physical manifestations of emotional distress?
Well, I'm somewhat tougher for the experience, but have continuing mid-afternoon headaches since April of 1999, and routinely have difficulty falling asleep. I began on sleep medication in April of 99 and have been continuing them since. So those are the two major physical changes.
I want to back up and ask you a question about a document I should have asked you about toward the beginning, but didn't. This is Exhibit 33. There are a series of documents in Exhibit 33. Can you describe for the jury generally what these documents are? What is an invention disclosure form?
It's a standard form that companies use when an employee of the company comes up with an idea that's probably new and likely to be valuable. The employee writes that idea up and in enough detail so what's called someone trained in the art could reproduce it or understand it. Make sure all the people who contributed to that idea are listed as investors, and that document is signed by the inventors. It's signed by at least two people who aren't inventors, and then it's submitted to the company for holding. And it turns out in the U.S., it's the person who invented something first rather than the person who filed with the patent office first. So these are important, and the dates are important.
And can you get the binder out in front of you?
What's the number again, please?
33. Just for the record, does Exhibit 33, what is in Exhibit 33, generally?
Exhibits 33 contain a copy of each of the invention disclosures on which I was either the only inventor or one of the co-inventors.
You submitted those in the normal course of business at Illumina?
Yes.
I think I asked you to count how many invention disclosure forms there are in that exhibit. Do you know how many there are?
Yes, I do.
How many?
There are 32.
One last exhibit. Dr. Zarnik, you recognize Exhibit 343?
Yes, I do.
What is this document, sir?
It's a photograph of Illumina employees that is intended to represent the second-year people who are at Illumina at the end of the second year.
How did you obtain this photograph, or your copy of the photograph?
Well, while I was employed at Illumina, we took the picture the first time, so the employees were gathered, and a photographer took the photo of all the employees at the company at the end of the second year.
Let me interrupt a second. When was that first photo taken?
It was taken in August of 2000.
Early, mid, late, do you recall?
I really don't recall.
Sometime in the month before your termination?
Yes.
And were you in that group photo?
Yes, I was.
And did you order a copy of it?
I paid for a copy of it, yes.
And what did you receive back from the company?
What I received was this picture, which was taken after I had been fired, and in this version of the picture, I'm not in it.
How long after your termination did you receive a copy of this group photo where you are not in it?
A couple of weeks after I'd been fired.
Sometime in September of 2000?
Yes.
Nothing further, Judge, at this time.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, Your Honor.